about space, you know, and that's where I got in trouble. I said I was John Q from outer space. And I found out one thing, we must never land, you know, just one at a time. And I've seen a lot of saucer people, and but I can't talk about it, you know, because back in the zoo. So we just got to wait, you know, until 1985, and then, oh, yeah, freeze those cats in the street on the streetcars and everything else. But I can hold off. I've got a little magazine article, 1985, coming out there in the Popular Mechanics. You'll see it in the April issue, and it's all there. But I thought, there is a lot of talk about flying saucers. And I want you to meet a man this evening that's actually seen some 300 flying saucers. And your name, sir?
My name's Elwood P. Suggins, and I'm from Bellbrook, Ohio. Mm-hmm.
And you've seen some 300 flying saucers, is that right, sir?
Yes, that is very true.
When did you see your last flying saucer?
The last one I seen was here Sunday week. It was out in a wheat field.
In a wheat field. Isn't that a little unusual?
No, I think they must feed off wheat or something.
I see. Can you describe the saucer to us?
Oh, very easily. I've seen over 300 of them. It's about as big as this here room. And when it come down, it give off a real funny whirring sound. Like... And the heat it give off was just intense. It was intense. Me and my kid was there, and it was fierce. It's fierce.
I see. And then what happened, Mr. Sutton? Well, then this here door opened up, and this little ladder come down, and this here teeny man come down this here ladder. Wait a minute, Mr. Suggins. When you say teeny, what do you mean by teeny? Well, like I say, he come down this here ladder and crossed over the road and reached up and milked my cow like this. I'd call that teeny, wouldn't you? Yes, I would, Mr. Suggins. Well, did he speak American? Did he speak English?
Yes, he did. He had this here glass head on him, and there's a little armature inside, and he went,
"Hello, I'm a Martian. I hope I speak your language. This is a recording."
And then what happened, Mr. Suggins?
Well, then I waited for the flip side.
Take me to your leader.
And did you take him to your leader?
No, I didn't know who my leader was.
I see. Did he do anything else?
Yes, he did. Every time my kid come out of the house, he shrunk him down about that size. And every time I let the dog out, the dog had buried him three times. I figure at least he could have did was shrink a dog so a kid had somebody to play with.
I see. Was there anything else?
Well, and he just dissolved a couple of chickens around the house, I suppose, for kicks. And then he got on this here ladder again. Open that little door. See, and he was... And then just after he left, there was something worked off on my body, a sort of radiation or something. And I commenced to shrink myself. It was just terrible.
Well, Mr. Suggins, wait a minute. Mr. Suggins, what's the matter?
Well, there you go. There you go, boys and girls. That's Jonathan Winters from way back. I hope a lot of you remember Jonathan Winters, one of the funniest guys around. Anyhow, the reason I played that was because about 3 o'clock in the morning, I tuned in on the radio, and they said there was an unidentified object landed on the president's White House lawn. And they thought it was a drone, maybe a drone, but I think it was a flying saucer. I think flying saucer came there, wanted to talk to Obama. But Obama's over in India. But I haven't heard any more about it today, and maybe they squashed it. What do you think? Yeah. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, where we got about 4 inches of snow last night. But that's nothing compared to what they think they're going to get on the East Coast. Wow, man, that's a real jaw-dropper. Well, I hope you read the report we got from Browntown out there and the boys. And they're getting ready for it, man, getting ready for it. I think they said they canceled 1,600 air flights. Wow, man, and I think United totally closed down today or tomorrow. Which reminds me, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. We keep trying to fool Mother Nature. Mother Nature comes right on back and fools us. Oh, you thought it was the baby Jesus? No, it was Mother Nature. You cross her and there's hell to pay. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, right here in north central Indiana, and it's pretty cool, but not too bad. Anyhow, that's it. Go up to resist.com and get educated, man. You need some education. I mean, our kind of education. You get all this education on the internet, but most of it's the wrong kind of education. Boy, we got somebody on the internet that's just got a real hard on about free thinkers or atheists. And he says here, yeah, well, at least you, Tom Metzger, founder of the neo-Nazi group White Aryan Resistance, knows that you have the entire atheist community on your side. Come, view an atheist as subhuman. I've gone up there. He's at itsnobody.wordpress.com. Go up there and pull his chain, man. He really goes crazy about non-believers. Well, we've got some clips here that I recorded in the last couple of days. First one I'm going to run for you is, you might have seen it in the press a while back, that skinhead that had tattoos all over his face and everything. That went to prison, and they took him out to go to the hospital, and he grabbed a gun from a guard and killed a guard. Anyhow, what he says is pretty good on here. I'm going to play it back for you. His name is Longmire.
Of all the memorable inmates interviewed on lockup, one made such a visually shocking impression that he stands alone in the history of the series.
When you look at Curtis with the tattoos all over his face, he's really physically intimidating.
I'm here for a burglary, forgery, and escape. I have a 1 to 15 IX rating in 2016.
When we first met Curtis Allgaier at Utah State Prison's Maximum Security Unit, it didn't take long for tattoos to become the focus of the interview.
Tell me a little bit about your tattoos and what some of them mean and when you got them out.
I've been getting tattoos since I was 13 years old. My whole family tattoos. That's what I do on the streets. I'm a tattoo artist. And certain ones have meanings. I got my wife's name across my forehead. Just, that's how much I love my lady. And other ones are my political beliefs.
Allgaier's political beliefs have to do with his near lifelong affiliation with the skinheads.
My whole family are skinheads. I was raised that way. Born and raised into it. My dad, my uncles, all my cousins, all my family. Being a skinhead is a way of life. It's preserving your race. It's being proud of who you are and wanting to better that. A swastika is a very powerful symbol. I wear it as a symbolism of pride of who I am. I have a lot of them.
Allgaier gave a more detailed account of his tattoos in this previously unaired footage.
What's the most painful part of your life?
It's a toss-up between the toes, behind the leg, and the lip. The lip, you got nerves, and the same as your toes, all your nerves in you, right? I was thinking, yeah, they won't hurt that bad. Good. Don't look at me as my tattoos and be like, oh my God, that guy's a failing or a white supremacist. I'm proud of who I am, and I'm proud to have my family be who we are. But I'm not a bad person because I got tattoos. Being white supremacist is not a bad thing.
And according to Allgaier, being a white supremacist doesn't mean he belongs to one of Utah State's white supremacist prison gangs.
You got SAC and SAW and Fourth Ride, KV, and those dudes they're not white supremacists. They're not part of a white supremacist. They were started by people who were rats in PC cases.
Interesting thing about Curtis was he claims he's not in a gang. He's not a gang member. He's just a white supremacist, a skinhead, and he felt there was a really, really severe difference.
I'm no part of them, I've never been a part of them, nor will I ever be a part of them. Those dudes, in my mind, are weak and lame. They're not white supremacists, nor will they ever be.
And at that point, one of the officers leaned into my ear and said, if you use that, he's going to get attacked. He's going to get stabbed.
While inmates like Allgaier are completely aware that talking about gangs could put them in peril, it is a risk they have taken time and time again when interviewed on lockup.
We knew that theoretically that soundbite might put him in danger, but we also knew, on the other hand, how important it was to Curtis that that distinction be made. And that's the choice that we went with.
2 years after this interview, however, Curtis Allgaier would make the worst decision of his life, one that virtually guarantees he will die in prison.
The suspect was able to get the guard's weapon away from him, and at least one shot was fired.
On June 25th, 2007, during a visit to an area hospital, Allgaier allegedly disarmed, shot, and killed the correctional officer escorting him.
Curtis had called me and told me that he had killed a cop, that he had escaped, asked him what had happened. He told me that he was sorry, that he loved me, and that's just about it. He just kept saying, I'm sorry, I love you.
After fleeing the hospital, he was taken back into custody 45 minutes later at a fast food restaurant.
I remember thinking, Curtis was in for burglary, forgery, escape. He was going to do less than 15 years. Curtis was going home, and now he's never going to go home.
It's not cool to be here, and living this lifestyle, you will screw up your life. I can't tell them, well, don't do it, because I've done it. But I can tell them that this isn't the way to go. You're not going to gain from coming here. You lose everything.
Well, I thought he did pretty good. Unfortunately, he's in a very bad situation now. But there are a number of prisoners like that, POWs, that are true to the cause, and they're not petty gang members, druggies, all that kind of stuff. There's a whole lot of them out there now in these gangs in the prison and on the street. They're really no better than, they've become no better than black druggies and all those kind of people, you see. Well, that's, unfortunately, early on, I decided to back the skinheads or support them. And it worked out pretty good for a while, but there was a part of my message they didn't listen to, and they went over to the right wing and listened to them. And pretty soon they were getting into all kinds of trouble, of which I had preached to them, you got to keep it cool and not cross the line. Well, it got so bad in the, I forget about what year it was, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s, that I told the skinheads that I'm not, I told them to grow their hair out, you know, forget the tattoos, go to college, get a good job, get a good education, and burrow into the system. And a certain amount of them did. And they're out there, and they're in good positions now because they've been there for quite some time. But a lot of the skinheads just couldn't give up the idea of just straight violence. And then a whole lot of them got into drugs. And once they cross the line there, there's really no turning back. They're done. But it's amazing how many people didn't hear what I had to say about going lone wolf and going underground and burrowing into the system and getting a good career. But I'm certainly glad that there was a certain percentage of them that did that very thing, and they're doing quite well now. And I don't know who they are, and I don't know where they are, and they can pull my fingernails, and I couldn't tell them anything. So that's the story there. I think I will send this Logmire maybe a book or something like that. He could be, the way he sounds, he could be a good influence on some of the other young guys coming into the prison, but I wouldn't want him to join a gang, and he's going to have to watch his back. Anybody that walks their own path in prison has got to watch their back at all times, I was listening to Max Kaiser over the weekend, and he had an anarchist on there who's operating out of Mexico now and not claiming really any national loyalties or anything like that. And what he said made a lot of sense, that perhaps it's a time to say, screw it, don't even worry about it. It's going to fall, and we're going to be white people wherever we go. We want to have a colony in Mexico, fine. If we want to have a colony someplace else, fine. There's all kinds of white people that collect in other countries. Plus, in his case, there's a lot of white people now in Mexico. And, of course, there's always been a sizable percentage of Mexico, white people speaking Spanish and so forth like that. So perhaps we've been going down the wrong road for a long time, thinking of getting power and somehow changing this monstrosity we're saddled with. I'm going to play this back for you and let me know what you think. That, of course, we're sort of that way now with the lone wolf situation and leaderless resistance. We're sort of an extended family. But it could go farther than that simply by turning our back on the system and not looking sort of stupid trying to change it, because it can only destroy itself, which it's doing. The empire is eating its tail and will eventually destroy itself. So I was doing an interview with this reporter the other day, and things like that came up, that she kept saying, well, how are you going to get power? How are you going to get power? How are you going to get power? And I said, well, I'm pretty much out of the power business, because power corrupts, and absolute power really corrupts. And there must be other ways to change, and especially you could change your own life, which, of course, I've pretty much done myself. But there's a lot of other people who are white and racist that haven't done that, and they're still hanging on to the system and think they're going to change the system. But the system itself is rotten, and the philosophy of the system is rotten. Let's listen to this and see what you think.
Back to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to turn to Jeff Berwick. He's a local resident. He's also well known in the Bitcoin community as well as a noted anarchist. Jeff, welcome to the Kaiser. Welcome back to the Kaiser Report.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Great to see you in person for once.
Yeah, we've been one of our earliest guests. Going back to the days, we were talking about the dollar and gold, and then since that time, Bitcoin has come around. But let's talk about Mexico. You're in Mexico. You live in Acapulco. You agree, this is an interesting question, you agree that Mexico is a failed state, but that's why you like it. So talk on this a little bit, Jeff.
Yeah, I've mentioned that a few times. People like Alex Jones say Mexico is a failed state, and they say it like it's a bad thing. I actually think it's good if all states fail. I don't want any government. But at the same time, people like Alex Jones haven't really even been to Mexico. You were just here. You were in Acapulco with me the last few days, the fourth most dangerous city in the world. It's not that dangerous, not that crazy. Mexico City, the same thing, very nice.
Right, so by failed state, a lot of times, I think what you're alluding to there also is that there's a lot of freedom on the street level. There's not a lot of whereas, you know, in countries, particularly in the U.S. now, the police are everywhere. The surveillance state is everywhere. It's becoming a police state, whereas in Mexico City and Acapulco, there's still a sense that people have their own individual sovereignty. Am I right on that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a huge amount of personal freedom here in Mexico. You can pretty much do anything you want. You can smoke where you want, drink where you want, do what you want. I even was coming into the building here today, and there was a police officer, and he called me boss. He was like, hey, jefe. That doesn't happen in the U.S. In the U.S., they're the boss, and they're going to always be attacking you. And it's just a lot better, more freedom down here in Mexico. I'd say by far the freest country in North America.
Okay. Now, Jeff, I would say you're part of, I would say, Doug Casey's gang, if you will, where there's this idea of the international man, or to internationalize your lifestyle. So you have businesses in one country, you reside in a second country, you might have obligations in a third country as a way to really insulate yourself from an invasive state. So here you are, you're part of this ability to have a multiple representation in different territories, if you will. But for the locals, though, what's their perception of Mexico, would they say it's a failed state? What is the kind of the local Mexican perspective on this?
Well, it's quite a bit different for Mexicans than it is for us foreigners, because we don't get too involved. We don't get bothered very much by the police here, whereas I know the locals get more bothered because the locals are the local slaves. They're owned by the government, and the government just takes advantage of them. For tourists, they're quite a bit better. So for people like us, and that's why I do live what you just pointed out, which is called the perpetual tourist or prior taxpayers sort of theory, PT theory, they call it. It was started by Harry Schultz in the 1960s. Who's become a good friend now. And it's just a way that you can live around the world much freer, because no one government really owns you if you do this sort of lifestyle. So, for example, here in Mexico, I'm not a resident, I'm not a citizen, I'm just a tourist, and I just stay here as a tourist. And the government always treats tourists quite well. They're like, yeah, come here, spend your money, or do whatever you want. But they don't treat the locals quite as good. So you just try to have your things, your businesses in different countries that are tax-free, your banks, banking in different countries that are that much better, safer than the U.S. They're much less leveraged and have no tax as well. And all those sort of ways. You can actually live almost completely free and legally, and this is interesting, legally, not that I care personally about legally because I don't find governments to be legitimate, but you can actually legally live this sort of way and not ever pay income tax.
Right. And I said there's a group of folks online. People can find Doug Casey's one, yourself, there's a few others. That really, I think, is becoming increasingly more interesting for people because the state is becoming quite aggressive in people's lives, and they're looking for alternatives. Now, let's talk about Mexico, the problems here. You've got a ringside seat. Obviously, there's a drug problem, the drug war, the dimensions there, prohibition, pro-prohibition, anti-prohibition is a big topic. What are your views?
Mexico is changing. Mexico has been the recipient of this heinous drug war from the U.S., and the U.S. government, Eric Holder, sends down a lot of automatic weapons for free, which we thank him for because we like weapons, we like guns for protecting ourselves. But
is this part of that Fast and Furious
scandal?
In other words, so drugs are going north and guns are going south.
Yeah, they're trying to whip up a lot of chaos down here because Mexico is a lot freer than the U.S., and they don't want people to know that. So they send in, the CIA usually works with the cartels quite a bit to create some chaos from time to time. There's really no major problems here in day-to-day life. I've never had a problem. Most normal people don't have problems.
Opt out of the system, as I would say, is kind of what you're doing to a large degree. Or we've seen some popular uprisings, as we do all over the world. We see the umbrella movement in Hong Kong. We see the Arab Spring. We see Occupy Wall Street. We see people on the street uprising. Where would you recommend moving toward, or talk a little bit about that?
By far the best way is just to ignore the government and to awaken people to realize it's unnecessary evil. It's illegitimate. Everything they do just makes our lives worse. And through that, and people stopping paying taxes all legally if they want, or setting up their own businesses, offshore jurisdictions, we can sort of get rid of the power of the government. I'm not for a violent uprising, although if it really came down to it, if I was forced to, you know, if the government was really oppressing me to the point where I could barely do anything, I would fight physically back. But I think it's all a matter of ideas now.
And you're setting up companies here in Mexico. And then how is that process? Is it pretty simple?
Well, actually, I don't ever set up a Mexican corporation. This is all part of what I do. So I set up offshore corporations, but we have businesses in Mexico. So these are all ways to do things. And, you know, your friend Russell Brand talks a lot about there's an awakening happening, and people are waking up that there's a major problem, and it's the government and the central banks. The one thing with Russell, I'm not sure, because he sounds sort of communist sometimes. So I'd like to officially challenge Russell Brand to debate me on his concepts, because I think he's 90% of the way there, and I think he can be a big help to getting rid of this problem of government.
Well, you mentioned Alex Jones, you mentioned Russell Brand. These are folks that have made incredible strides on the alternative media. So the mainstream media is really in eclipse. It's in the sunset, and we see something new emerging. Russell Brand has a bigger media footprint in the UK than the Sun, which is the newspaper, which is Rupert Murdoch's, one of his media outlets. I know you've got a big event coming up, Anarcho Polco, which I guess is anarchy in Acapulco. So how do you see alternative media fitting into your vision?
Well, you pointed out that most mainstream media, the CNNs, the CNBCs, they're all dying. CNBC has its lowest ratings of all time, including the very first year it started in the 90s. They're pretty much, no one watches it anymore. CNN, Larry King left, he went to RT, and he said CNN should just show SpongeBob SquarePants cartoons because no one's watching it. People are waking up. They know it's propaganda. They know it's just, it's not like your show or the things that I do, like, or Russell Brand. They're bringing a lot more truth to people. So people are tuning out of the old mainstream media and tuning into the people who are actually talking truth. So there's a big change going on. And at Anarchapoco, which is an event I'm having in Acapulco, February 27th to March 1st, it's going to be a lot of free thinkers coming down, a lot of Bitcoin people. And we're going to be talking, there's so many mainstream, or not mainstream, so many big independent media people coming, including James Corbett. I don't know if you're familiar with
sure.
him.
Sure. The Corbett Report.
Yes, he's excellent.
Yeah, Roger Ver, I believe, is speaking. Now, Roger Ver is an interesting case because he's a huge Bitcoin advocate. Mm. He gave up his U.S. citizenship, believing that he could go to the U.S. by simply applying for a visa, but he's been declined three times for a visa, and he's got family in the U.S., et cetera.
Yeah.
It, was this a case of somebody maybe being a little naive about things, or what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that Roger rightfully wanted to get out of the U.S. I think anyone who's really involved in Bitcoin should get out of there. They're, just look at the Ross Ulbricht trial, which just started this week. Charlie Schrem. Just
talk a little bit about the Ross Ulbricht for Silk Road, correct?
Yeah, for Silk Road.
And Silk Road. So that's that trial is ongoing. And also, as you mentioned, Charlie Schrem, who was now sentenced for 2 years in jail for doing something that the big banks do routinely, but on a scale 1,000 times bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. Ross Ulbricht's on trial for just having a free market website. That's all it was. And I really recommend to a lot of people involved in these sort of things, Bitcoin or anything like that, just to get out of the U.S. The U.S. is now one of the most corrupt criminal terrorist organizations on the planet, the U.S. federal government. And it's so interesting to see people like Edward Snowden defecting from the U.S. and going to Russia for asylum. This is what's going on. There's a massive change going on. It's exciting, but it's also kind of dangerous in many ways. And there's going to be a lot of volatility in the coming years as all this, all these things play out even more.
You mentioned Bitcoin a couple of times there. I want to talk about Bitcoin a little bit. Because when we started talking, you know, years ago, it was about the dollar, dollar collapse, dollar overvalue, talking about gold and these themes, and then Bitcoin came around. And you're very much, I think, associated with folks that are in the Austrian School of Economics, that school of thinking. Mm-hmm. And initially, they were completely against Bitcoin. It seems as though in the last couple of years, there's been a sea change, if I'm detecting that correct. I mean, Peter Schiff, maybe he accepts Bitcoin, but I think he doesn't really yet. He's fully on board, I don't think. But how do you, is that a fair characterization?
Absolutely, it definitely is. There's a lot of Austrian economics people who are also essentially anarcho-capitalists, people like Doug Casey, Gary North, many, and a lot of them are kind of older, and I don't want to like put this against them, but when they heard about it, they just thought this is some sort of crazy computer money. So it took a while. I think I was the person who sort of convinced Peter Schiff that it's not crazy. Doug Casey started out coming out saying that he's kind of he thinks it's kind of weird and crazy, and now he's pretty on board with it. So it was more like just an uptake of them understanding what it really was. Once they understood it actually is an amazing free market money that anyone who really wants freedom should be all on board.
And recently, I guess we should mention that the price of Bitcoin, after reaching over 1,000, you know, it's pulled back into the hundreds.
Yeah.
What's your take?
That's been very interesting for sure. We were talking before that when it went over $1,000, I said I didn't know if it was going to go to 100 next or to 2,000 next, because it's a very new market. It's a very small market as well. It's very volatile. There's so many things that can happen in it. But I did say, and this was about a year ago, that I think the bottom's coming at around 150, and I think we hit that today, so we'll see what happens. But it's wild and crazy. This is the free market.
So you've got about 30 seconds left, so I just wanted to touch again on Anarchapulco, the event coming up. The dates again are?
February 27th to March 1st. It's really hard to spell. It's Anarchapulco, A-N-A-R-C-H-A-P-U-L-C.
Of course, you're an anarchist. Why would you make it many, you know, the spelling easy to do?
Yeah, we do everything a little different. But it's going to be great. It's going to, so many people are coming, so many amazing people, a lot of Bitcoin people, the entire Mexican Bitcoin community. And hopefully you guys come. I know you guys really enjoyed your stay here in Mexico.
Jeff Berwick, thanks again for being on the Kaiser Report.
My pleasure.
And
Well, that was quite interesting, and it's something to think about. Something to think. You know, if I had a lot of money, what I would do is go to these kind of meetings. I wouldn't waste my time with the David Duke meetings, people like that, Stormfront and all that. I'd go to these kind of meetings, and because we need to have a lot of input to step aside and let this goddamn monstrosity central government fall. He mentioned at one point communism. You see, communism and capitalism are just twin sisters. The centralized state. And any time you have a centralized state breathing down your neck, you're not free. You're not free at all. They can pick you up any time for any reason they want to come up with. So I think thinking along these lines, and I know we have a lot of people who have done this, and I know friends of ours who have gone to other countries and are doing quite well. But the one thing going along with that, you've really got to learn other languages, something that I've screwed around and failed to do. I was in Germany for 3 years and sit around at the Gasthaus drinking beer and didn't learn the language. So, and this is what I'm encouraging all the POWs that write us in the prison. You got plenty of time to learn a language. Do it. So, anyhow, I like the way the guy's thinking. It's thinking more like I've said before, a privateer, a pirate. Well, I got a note from a Spanish-speaking Aryan, and here's what he says. The U.S. is being invaded by South Americans at such a rate by the Mexicans, Hondurans, El Salvador, and the list goes on and on. And this is why we as white Americans need to learn Spanish in order to lead in the workplace. People everywhere are learning Spanish because our neighborhoods are becoming barrios. Everyone is going bilingual, and we need to keep up with the modern times. If you have a comrade doing time in jail or prison, it would be a good idea to send him or her a book on how to learn Spanish. Signed, Celtic Lone Wolf, Southern California. Well, I agree, and not just Spanish. I mean Russian, French, German, any of those languages. It's amazing how many Europeans speak 4 or 5 languages. And some may want to do something that's a little harder, and that's learn Chinese. It seems like for the next few decades, the Chinese language is going to be pretty important. Well, let's go to the mailbag here. I got a nice letter in here from Matt Hale today, so I'll read it to you. Thank you for the 2 letters that I have received from you since I last wrote you. I am indeed doing well, though for some strange reason, the classical music radio station that we get piped in is down right now, and that certainly hurts the quality of my life. Music is a big part of my life and who I am. I dry up inside when I don't have it. Not having my violin is bad enough, but not hearing the classical music station that I listen to for most of the day. No thanks. I don't quite understand it, but apparently some kind of part blew for the station, and so the staff here needs to fix it. It figures that all of the rest of the stations are fine. Well, the good news is that there are actually many prisoners who listen to classical music here, and so I am by no means alone in pushing for this station. The staff seem to have falsely assumed that loving the station was no big deal to us, but that is by no means the case. Anyway, we'll have to all the, wait a minute. Anyway, we will have to all hay on the staff until we get it back. I guess rag on the staff. I'll have to play the music in my head in the meantime. just as Der Fuhrer was an addict at heart, I am a violinist at heart. Before pretty much anything else, quote, without music, life would be a mistake, unquote. That was from Nietzsche. Speaking of the violin, the reason why they don't want to let me have it is because they really can't bear the thought of a prisoner here being halfway normal life. They would rather us watch television all day and thus join the brainwashed, polluted masses. Masses who are incapable of any kind of independent life. Nor do they for one second think that I would use my violin as a weapon, which is especially absurd when you consider how small and fragile it is, and when you consider that we are not ever allowed outside of ourselves without being cuffed from behind. Yes, I am in solitary confinement and have been for 12 years. Boy, time flies. Anyway, we are never going to give up trying to get my violin, not only for its own sake, but because its denial makes so little sense. Well, Matt, you're not trying to make sense out of the federal prison system. You're dealing with a bunch of moron automatons. Letting me have it would not hurt anybody. Yes, but by depriving you of it, Matt, is the way they get their kicks. Federal and state prisons are full of sadists running the joint. Yes, I remember when you all and Al Sharpton were on the Geraldo show. I think it was. And I myself sat next to him during that show in the Alabama about the state of race relations that I did in 2000, I think. On another note, I hear that the speeches that you and I gave at Osceola, Indiana in August 2002 are online too. I sure am glad that despite my imprisonment, people are still seeing me and hearing me all around all the same. I agree with you fully that it is certainly not our place to save the present order of things. The quicker it falls, the better. I am amazed by how many patriots there are still around. It's hard to understand. These people are living totally in the past, fighting for a country that no longer exists. Like you always said, if voting could change things, they'd make it illegal. What we need to do instead is support secession movements. Well, I was sort of talking about that earlier in the show. Not so much movements, but by personal secession. Or a small collective secession. Anyhow, the more the merrier. If we can resume some local control, we can straighten things out. No, you're not going to straighten out the system, Matt. The system is too far gone. We have to make the world a bigger place once again. Having the American flag and hoping the Constitution will save us is about as foolish as it gets. The judges and the politicians destroyed the Constitution a long time ago. Well, I tend to think it was destroyed the minute it was written because of centralizing the government and gradually taking all power away from the states. I'm working on my second book now, but like you say, the first one should be published soon. The second one pretty much lays things out for the entire white world for good. The first one sows the seeds for the second one. I'm glad that you'll still be around to read them. Speaking of books, I recently found that Rudy Stanko has copies of that original 73 printing of Nature's Eternal Religion, and I've asked him to send me one. It should be arriving here any day now. Thank you for answering me about this. I want the original printing for various reasons, but one of them is that it has a lot of fewer typos in it than the later printings, and there's actually some missing text in the latter printings too. Speaking of books, I'm actually well stocked with them at the moment, generally. However, if you happen to have a book on the German language laying around, that would be next. You see, I'm studying German right now, and so a book in that language would help me in my study. Thanks for asking. And as you know, Metzger in German means butcher. Ha ha. Mein Kampf in German should be already be on the way. Please acknowledge your receipt of this letter in some form or fashion, maybe raising some of the subjects I raised. Thanks. Dear friend, your friend Matt. Okay. Well, it sounds like he's doing pretty good considering this monstrosity prison he's in. And I'll have him sent a German language course ASAP. Yeah, and thanks to you people who subscribe to our radio show that help to fund that kind of thing. You know, that's where it comes from. And I tell them, too. Because I know Dennis Mahon had said, well, don't short yourself. I have to tell him. I said, well, that money that I'm sending to you is not only coming from me, but it's coming from our contributors to the radio show. Yeah. Now, I've dug up an interesting interview with people who work very closely with Malcolm X. You might find that odd, but I don't, because he was a black separatist. And a counterpart different than us, but they went through the same problems and sometimes worse than we do. And of course, you know, Malcolm X was assassinated. The rumors have been wild about that ever since. Some of them say they think Farrakhan was in on it, but I don't know. But he was censured at the time by Elijah Muhammad for. When Kennedy was assassinated, he said the chickens have come home to roost, and for that, the leader of the black Muslims, Elijah Muhammad, gave him 90-day suspension. So they talk about that in this, too. But this interview was quite some time ago, and it's quite revealing about the feds. And so I guess I'll send it along to you as a MP3 file with the show, because it's 53 minutes. And I won't take up the show time with that. Not sure whether I sent you this the other day or not. It's by my sweetie pie. She's putting this together. It was on about the movie Sharpshooter. Was that it? Anyhow, I'm going to play it for you again. Just I don't want you not to hear it. Okay. Okay.
American Sniper is directed by Clint Eastwood, and tells the story of Chris Kyle, a United States Navy SEAL who served four tours of duty in Iraq as a sniper credited with 160 confirmed kills, and earning him the dubious honor of being lauded the most lethal sniper in the United States military history. Played by Bradley Cooper, in the movie Kyle is an all-American hero. A Texas cowboy who joins the military out of a sense of patriotism and a yearning for purpose and direction in his life. Throughout the UberTough selection process, Kyle is a bastion of stoicism and determination, willing to bear any amount of pain and hardship for the honor of being able to serve his country as a Navy SEAL, America's equivalent of the samurai. The personal struggle he endures as a result of what he experiences and does in Iraq is not motivated by any regrets over the people he kills, including women and children, but on his failure to kill more and thereby save the lives of American soldiers as they go about the business of tearing the country apart, city by city, block by block, and house by house. If American Sniper wins one Oscar, never mind the six it's been nominated for, when this annual extravaganza of movie pomp and ceremony unfolds in Hollywood on February 22nd, it will not only represent an endorsement of the United States' exceptionalism, but worse, it will be an insult to the Iraqi people. In the movie, they are depicted as a dehumanized mass of savages occupying the same role as the Indians in John Wayne Western movies of old, responsible for their own suffering and the devastation of their country, which the white man is in the process of civilizing. Anything resembling balance and perspective is sacrificed in American Sniper to the more pressing needs of the United States propaganda, which holds that the guys who served in Iraq were the very best of America, men who went through hell in order to protect the freedoms and way of life of their fellow countrymen at home. It is the cult of the soldier writ large, men who, in the words of Kyle Bradley Cooper, in the movie just want to get the bad guys. The bad guys are, as mentioned, the Iraqis. In fact, if you had just arrived in the movie theater from another planet, you would be left in no doubt from the movie's opening scene that Iraq had invaded and occupied America rather than the other way round. Unsurprisingly, the real Chris Kyle was not as depicted by Clint Eastwood and played by Bradley Cooper. In his autobiography, upon which the movie is supposedly based, Kyle writes, "I hate the damn savages. I couldn't give a flying FK about the Iraqis." It is clear that the movie's director, Clint Eastwood, when faced with the choice between depicting the truth and the myth, decided to go with the myth. But it should come as no surprise, given that the peddling of such myths is the very currency of Hollywood. Over many decades, the United States movie industry has proved itself one of the most potent weapons in the armory of the United States imperialism, helping to project a myth of an America, defined by lofty attributes of courage, freedom, and democracy. The killers among the United States, as the myth has it, these values, and with them America itself, are continually under threat from the forces of evil and darkness that lurk out with and oftentimes within. The mountain of lies told in service to this myth has only been exceeded by the mountain of dead bodies on the basis of it, victims of the carnage and mayhem unleashed around the world by Washington. Chris Kyle was not the warrior or hero portrayed in American Sniper. He was in fact a racist killer for whom the only good Iraqi was a dead Iraqi. He killed men, women, and children, just as his comrades did during the course of a brutal and barbaric war of aggression waged by the richest country in the world against one of the poorest. They say that patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel. In the hands of a movie director with millions of dollars and the backing of a movie studio at its disposal, it is far more dangerous than that. It is a potent weapon deployed against its victims, denying them their right to even be considered victims, exalting in the process, when it comes to Hollywood, those who murder and massacre in the name of America. With this in mind, it is perhaps fitting that Chris Kyle was shot and killed by a former Marine at a shooting range in Texas in 2013. "Man was born into barbarism," Martin Luther King said, when killing his fellow man was a normal condition of existence. The statements, views, and opinions expressed in this column are solely those of the author and do not necessarily represent those of RT.
However, most of the views on this little article that I've switched to audio for you, I agree with. And anybody with any sense of understanding of war and occupation and just outright killing anybody, and they have the gall to call it racist. Well, it's a predatory capitalist racist. It's a military-industrial complex racist. It's a misuse of the word racist, where we believe in racial separation, and just the opposite. We don't believe in occupying and invading other countries and subjecting them to slavery. So the very word racist is misused. Don't you wish that people with that kind of zeal would be that interested in protecting their race right here in the United States and not going off into foreign countries and non-white countries and killing everybody they can find? But these same kind of people, this person, Sniper, he would, if he got in an argument with you about race, he would probably shoot you. Because you're racist. He's not a racist. Yeah, right. One thing they leave out of these programs is the fact that the military, the different sections of the military industrial complex, maintain offices right there in Hollywood. And they're always looking for good scripts. And they'll pour all kinds of tax money in supporting a film if it portrays the military or the FBI or all of that kind of stuff in a good way. And a lot of people don't know that. They don't talk about it much, but they always talk about how much money Hollywood pours into it, but a lot of that money comes right out of your pocket as a taxpayer.
On the Ron Paul Institute website, an article posted on Wednesday that talked about the French attacks being a black flag operation. This was written by someone else, not you. I want to make that very clear, written by Paul Roberts. But it argues that it has all the characteristics of a false flag operation. People are looking at you, Dr. Paul, and saying it's on your website, so maybe you believe that way. Do you?
Well, no, obviously not. And I don't even think Paul Craig Roberts believes that. I think he suggested it. He wanted a discussion. And he has some really good things in there. It's a shame that the media doesn't pick up and say, hey, you know, what about this chief investigator of this event committed suicide right in the middle of it? I have no idea what's going on there, but that to me is big stuff. So no, I think what's going on here is Paul Craig Roberts is determined to try to get truth out and get people to listen and pay attention. It's sort of like the people in this country especially have lost a lot of confidence in governments, per se, including our own. I mean, we've been trying to get to all the answers of Benghazi, and, of course, Fast and Furious was a scandal. Nobody believes those answers. 80% of the American people don't even believe the Kennedy Commission on who killed Kennedy. So people are very skeptical, and I think this is the whole point. And, of course, we have Rahm Emanuel, who says, don't ever let an emergency go to waste. And I think this is part of what's going on there, that this is a design to restructure and reorient people on foreign policy. I think that is what's going on.
The people who understand the news, they look at it and they go, wow, where did this come from here? What is he, on medication?
I would disagree that they're not accusations. I would agree that he pointed out some shortcomings and wanted to ask questions and get to some answers.
I don't know whether you call it false flag or not. Maybe that's the wrong term. I've never liked that term. But I believe that these people in NSA are like lions waiting along the trail for the wildebeest to come by. And when one comes by that's weak and unhealthy, they jump that wildebeest and take it out and eat it. Well, I think that's the way these governments run. They wait for a crisis, then they jump right on it. Or they see a crisis maybe forming and they urge it along. Never exactly initiating the problem, but taking full advantage of the problem. Like I told you with James Earl Ray and Martin Luther King. I truly believe James Earl Ray tracked Martin Luther King all over the country. He was definitely after to get him. I don't think that James Earl Ray had big financing. Just because he got a ticket to London, that doesn't make him a millionaire. But the CIA, the FBI, or at least the FBI, I believe, was trailing him all the time and hoping he'd set it up. And then he did it. And the FBI was happy. James Earl Ray was happy. So that's what a lot of this stuff you see in the news is. And if you look at it from that point of view, because if you don't, you'll get confused. You'll be arguing back and forth. No, it was the FBI. No, it was James Earl Ray. No. No, that's the way they work. And just like that Rahm Emanuel said, don't let a crisis be wasted, you know. Well, let's see. That's about it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Tuesday, and we'll see if we can raise some more dust on the trail. 14:05 and five words. What do we say? I have nothing to say. You're not going to go get into trouble by not saying anything. They will threaten you. They will cajole you. They might even beat you. But at least you're probably not going to go to prison for the rest of your life.